Never start with the head. The victim gets all fuzzy.
Here's Johnny.
I see that.
Houston, we have a problem.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 98 for the 28th of August, 2010. My name is David McVeigh, and I am going to try and be in charge of this madhouse, but this week we are joined by Josh Philpott, as always. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic, and we'll talk about that later, why. But we're in the other... Forget it. Move on. Next person.
And we are joined... This is where it gets a little bit chaotic, because Callum is responsible for actually making me completely lose it on platforms one night. And so, Callum Austin Wilson, how are you?
I'm... good. Let's see if we can't do that again today, though.
Well, we've already lost it once on tech today, so you know it's not going to be hard to get me over the edge today, I think. We're also joined by Shane Gregory, who is off camera, unfortunately, for the live listeners, but he does have a mic. Say hi.
Hey, everybody.
We're trying to keep the shot for the guests tight to a two-shot, so Shane joined us for tech, and he'll probably join us again for the after show, but for film, he's just... But he did see the film with us, so we want him here, because he's going to chime in. All right, so what is this show? This is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and this week, along with our usual assortment of things like lists of five and some entertainment buzz, we are going to review the new horror remake of Piranha 3D. Now, I just got to state, though, that we've actually rearranged the show just a little bit for today, because normally we've been putting the film review at the beginning of the show. We're actually moving it to the back end of the show, because we are going to have a spoiler area on this, because we're going to want to talk about certain things on this film, so it's easier to do spoilers at the end than it is at the beginning. So just to let you know that we're going to start with entertainment buzz. Now, we also want to throw out a quick couple of mentions. First thing is Brad from Movie Fan Cast, as we've all talked about Brad, and he was in the chat room for our tech show, has a new podcast called Write This Instant, which you can find on iTunes, and it's also on themoviefanhouse.com. The reason why I bring this up is because I'm going to be on that show in the next week or so. We're recording on Monday, our time. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and we're actually going to talk about the film Not Quite Hollywood, which is a documentary about early Australian exploitation films. So we've actually reviewed that film on our show, but like 2 years ago. So it's going to be fun to go back and revisit it. And I was actually rewatching the film again over the last couple of days, and boy, it's a great film. Anyway, we'll talk about more of that on that show. And the other thing we have to put a shout out to is Charlie and Brad over at Movie Fancast, because they're about to do a limited series, which... we've all been invited on to. When I say all, sorry, Callum, I don't mean you.
I'm coming anyway.
Or Shane. But when I say all, it's that original crowd that...
So really only half of us.
Half of us in this room. But it's that original crowd from Geek Actually from 7 months ago, 8 months ago. Individually, of course, because they only want one guest on at a time. But I'm going to be on at one time. Dave is going to be on at one time. Josh is going to be on at one time. And it's a Walking Dead miniseries where they're going to do a couple episodes leading up to the new series. And then each episode is going to be reviewing the last episode of the new TV series. I am so excited. And we've got some Walking Dead news today, which we will talk about as well. But yeah, so just to keep your eyes open on the Movie Fan House, because they've got some really good stuff happening over there. And as I say, right this instant, in the next week or 2 weeks, I'm not sure when the episode will actually air, but I'm going to be on that show as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. All right, so that out of the way, let's have a little talk about some entertainment news. First thing I want to talk about is, considering that we are reviewing Piranha 3D, a sequel has already been announced. And I just thought I'd give you this quote from Alexander Aja, who's the director of the film, who said, quote, "We are thrilled that audiences are not just loving Piranha 3D, but cheering for it." And it's fantastic that so many critics are really getting the movie and recommending it. We can't wait to get to work on the sequel. And it says, he goes on, also quoted as saying, "We've had many ideas. There is a full moon party in Thailand, a huge event with like 200,000 young people from all around the world taking mushrooms and partying on the beach. So they're thinking about setting it there.
What are all these places I've never been to?
Why do I not know about?
Yeah, it's like, Callum, you got to get partying. There's parties happening all around the world. All right, so... that was the first little bit of news, which I thought was very interesting. And when we talk about Piranha 3D, we'll see if a sequel is warranted. So we'll save that for the review. But what we will talk about, first of all, is if you remember a couple of weeks ago, Josh, we actually showed some really, really rough pirate footage of the trailer for The Walking Dead. Mm. Now, a higher resolution version has finally gone online. And you can now see the entire clip. At geekactually.com, we've embedded it. I have grabbed an excerpt for today's show, though. Now, I can't show the whole thing because it goes for 4.5 minutes, all right? Mm-hmm. But it is well worth going to have a look at. If you are a fan at all of The Walking Dead or excited about this...
Or zombies, or the director,
or the comic book, or what have you, and you are at all excited about this series, the series is going to debut on Halloween in America, and it's a 6-episode first season, but it's already been picked up for its second season, so this is going to be huge. Here is just a little bit of that clip. Now, this is the 4.5 minutes that was shown at Comic-Con. As I said, I've just grabbed 1.5 minutes out of like the center of it, so a good juicy part of it. Juicy is probably the wrong word to use, but a good juicy part of it, so you can have a look at it. And if this at all excites you, go to geekactually.com and watch the whole thing, because I am really excited about this. So here is The Walking Dead.
This does excite me.
Do you even know what's going on? I woke up in the hospital. That's all I know.
Lori? Lori! Carl!
But you know about the dead people, right? I saw a lot of that out on the loading dock, even tossed down the stairwell. Not the ones they put down, the walkers. They were saying on the news some kind of virus.
Things got crazy.
Man, you won't believe the panic. The broadcast stopped. And that was the last we heard.
My wife and son, they're alive.
If they got out of here, they're in Atlanta.
Why there?
Military protection, shelter, food. They told people to go there. Said they were working out how to solve this thing.
Atlanta sounds like a good deal.
Listen, one thing. They may not seem like much one at a time, but in a group all hungry...
Man, you watch your ass.
Come on, that's awesome.
Children.
That's awesome. So, yeah, so as I say, we are eagerly awaiting October for this show. I cannot wait. And I'm completely up to date on the comics. I'm waiting month by month for these things to come out now, and it's driving me crazy. Because I just want to know. Because I read them. I read... it's like 75 issues back to back.
Yeah.
And it was just an amazing read, you know? So anyway, so we'll wait for that. And as I say, if you want to see the whole thing, go to geekactually.com. We've got it there. Now, the other thing that I thought was very interesting this week was that Angelina Jolie has been set to make her directorial debut. Now, the thought was that she was going to direct herself, a la Clint Eastwood, so forth. But no, apparently she is not going to star in it. She's written the screenplay herself, and she is directing it. And it is a love story set during the Bosnian War. And the film focuses on a Serbian man and a Bosnian woman who meet on the eve of the war and the effect the war has on their relationship. And I got to say, I'm very curious to see what sort of a director Miss Jolie makes. I think she is actually a very good actress. I think she's underused or misused or what have you a lot. But I think she is a very good actress. And that is a good step to being a good director.
Well, she's obviously got a lot of experience in film. Like,
well, that's right. Well, she's been on set often enough to know the ins and outs of it. Yeah. But
give
so
I'll give her a chance.
I'll give her a chance.
I'll let her have this one.
She has Callum's permission, apparently. All right. So with that, we then move on to another little piece of film news. This one was actually... this one just kind of caught my eye because I thought, boy, is this jumping on the bandwagon or what? We all know that The Social Network is coming out soon.
Yes.
Now, The Social Network, for those who don't know, is a film about the formation of Facebook and all the underhanded dealings and the backstabbing and everything that went on during all of that, based on the book by Ben Mezrich called The Accidental Billionaires. And the film is getting great critical rave at this point. It comes out in literally about a month's time.
Is it previewed at any festivals or anything?
It is debuting, actually, at, I think it's the New York Film Festival or something like that in the next week or so. So it's around the corner. People have started to see it. The early screenings have already started to happen. Some early crits have already started to come out, and they're just saying it's just amazing.
Yeah.
However, because of that, a book called Google, The End of the World as We Know It, has now been optioned, and they're making a movie about the formation. The book was written by Ken Auletta, I think it is, A-U-L-E-T-T-A, Auletta. They've now optioned this, and they're going to make a film about the formation of Google. Now, I've got to say...
It doesn't seem like there'd be quite as much... tension. Well,
there isn't a real... I mean, it's about two rich kids who got together and money was no real problem and they created a little search engine that kind of became successful and then it allowed them to build the company. I don't know if there's a lot of real dramatic tension here.
No.
No.
But at the same time...
Probably a lot of helicopters and jetpacks and whatnot. So, but,
jetpacks. Flying cars.
I assume that's the image that I have of the Google offices.
Yes, sir.
Maybe it's going to... No, Google.
So they could do like a little war with China or something.
Well, just dramatize everything a little bit. Instead of just having like, you know, them sitting in a room complaining about whether Google should be in China, they could have an actual war. It's like Google robots versus Chinese soldiers.
Googlebots. There you go. Yeah. Googlebots.
Well, they are trying to take over the world, so maybe that's where they're going to go with the film.
Well, maybe. I mean, I just love the fact that it's called The End of the World as We Know It. I mean, really? So this is coming from a company, mind you, that their motto is Do No Evil. And it, I mean, how much tension can you build in a film for a company that does no evil?
They do evil. They just do it subtly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually, they're going to put this in with the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow when the war began. That's the one. And you find out in the sequel that that's actually Google's troops invading Australia.
That's the Googlebots coming in. Yeah. All right, quick round around this table. Are we going to see Tomorrow When the World when the War Began?
Hell no.
I'm going to see it. It's like the most interesting Australian film I've...
That's the only thing that's actually at all making me think I want to see it, is the fact that at least they're doing something different. You know?
And they put a lot of money into a film that... They put a lot of money into
$30 million budget. Big budget for Australia. Not quite in the Australia budget, but that was a disaster. $30 million budget. They are trying to make a film that will open internationally, which is not in the Australian psyche, so I give them credit for that. Based on really popular novels.
They're good, too.
I haven't read the books, but they're really popular.
You disagree that he hasn't read them, or you
disagree? I disagree with the thing. I thought they were a horrible book.
Now we have an acquaintance. Well, Josh has an acquaintance who has actually seen the film and said it was awful. So
I'm
going to
give it a chance. It's either Australian films coming out this year. This and the Guardians of Owls or whatever the fuck that film's called.
Yeah, but at least that has Rob Schneider behind it and Animal Logic behind it. I still think it's going to be crap, but at least it's got
Rob Schneider.
Not Rob Schneider. Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder.
Thank you. I was about to say, Rob Schneider? I'm not going to see it now.
Zack Snyder directed it. So I mean,
Rob Schneider is an owl.
Who turns into a girl? Oh, God, Rob Schneider. All right. Look, I don't know. I have a policy. You guys know this. I haven't paid to go see an Australian film in an awful long time. I have a problem with the Australian film industry, and this is well known, and I've talked about this a lot. Yes, Shane?
Can I just have a quick word? I'm not too much of a big fan of Australian films, but I just heard a recent piece of news yesterday that I stumbled across. There is a New Zealand film called The Boy that's been breaking records.
The clips I've seen of it look really good, too. Yeah, The Boy looks really good. Yeah. Yeah, oh, no. Sorry, just Boy.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah, boy. Yeah. And I'm wondering whether, because of the cover and the name, whether or not it has some association with the U2 album.
I don't know.
Because it's got the same hat and it's got the name.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
I did not even realize that.
Did you? But you can see where I'm going with
that. The poster's got the same font as the Where the Wild Things Are trailer.
Yeah.
Cover thingy poster.
And so Calisinda says it in the chat room, he said, at least we can make good games here. Perhaps they can put more of that money there. Look.
No, let's not. Let's leave the good games here.
And look, it's not about money. It's never, and this has been the big argument with Australian films for a long time. It's not about money. You don't need a lot of money to make a great film.
Definitely not.
Some decent acting and decent scripts and a good director can put together a good film on no money. We've seen this many, many, many times in America, in England, in Ireland, around the world. We have seen great films come out that cost no money. This whole argument that Australia has about, we don't have the money in the industry is bullshit.
Well, we have. I mean, there are talented actors in Australia, and there are talented directors, and there is the money.
Yeah, but anybody who has shown any talent in this country in acting seems to leave.
She seems to leave. I just find it very, self-serving. Like, Australia comes out. It's supposed to be this big thing. It's like Baz Luhrmann. He's the star child of the Australian film industry. And it comes out, and everyone's like, oh my god, it's the greatest film ever, and everyone else in the world, every other country in the world is like,
but the funny thing is, everybody's here says, oh, Australia's greatest film ever, and yet it bombed.
Yeah.
So who saw it? Nobody actually went to see it.
In the film industry went, it's amazing.
Yeah, but the general audience hated it.
Exactly.
Everybody hated it. That was the problem.
They're not making films for
This is the scariest part about themselves. Baz Luhrmann, though. I was actually having a discussion with Mirren. Now, for the regular listeners of the show know Mirren Lee. She comes on the show a lot. And we were actually having a long discussion the other day about Baz Luhrmann, and we had this very heated discussion, because whenever Baz Luhrmann's name comes up, it always gets that way. because the thing that infuriates me about Baz Luhrmann is the fact that I personally thought Moulin Rouge sucked. I hated Moulin Rouge. I thought it was a mess. I thought it was a sign of a director who had no idea what they wanted to do, and they just literally just kept throwing stuff at the screen, hoping something would stick, right? What really frustrates me about that film is you listen to review podcasts or you read reviews from the United States, they adore it. And you sit there and you go, what is it about that film that you liked? I don't understand what it is that attracted them to this film.
I'm sorry, but I didn't actually think it was as bad as you did. I
hated it.
Yeah. Look, I didn't really like it, but admittedly I went into it because I really loved the soundtrack and watched it after listening to the soundtrack a lot, because it has a lot of good artists doing a lot of either covers of other people's songs or original songs, and a lot of the albums.
Yeah, look, I don't deny the soundtrack was great. I hated the film.
David Bowie's Nature Boy as the opening for the thing. Very, very cool. When you watch the movie, I tried to attach those to it, but even the re-recordings of the music weren't as good as the album versions. So it was like, I went through the film and I was like, yeah, it was all right, but I didn't hate it. I just didn't think it was that great.
Yeah. I was really,
as a musical
I have
film,
a very big
meh
for that.
Big
yeah.
meh.
Yeah, and it didn't excite me. It didn't really tickle my movie bone. And,
no.
I just never understood. I didn't think it was the worst
thing
ever. I
sat there watching it just going, I don't get this. Am I too old? Am I the wrong gender? What is wrong? Why don't I get this? I don't get this at all.
And I went to Paris, and the Moulin Rouge looked nothing like that. Fucking Baz Luhrmann.
Lying with this set design. What a bastard.
Look, Delta Knight says, I like Moulin Rouge, but I like musically kind of movies. So do I. I like musicals.
Yeah, no, dude, but
no problem with that at all.
Admittedly, though, people that are huge, Wicked fans and so on and so forth, they all adore Moulin Rouge. So maybe it's a heavy musical person kind of a thing, like the kind that regularly sees them when they come to the country kind of people.
I don't know. Moulin Rouge does not do it for me. I'm sorry.
I'm sure if you're
what
you like musicals,
about
you're more
the
likely
The Tomorrow in the World Began.
Oh, right.
Australian
okay,
films.
Cool. I was just trying to figure out where we were.
You may have noticed, by the way, with this meandering conversation, that it's a really weak news week. There is not a lot of news out there, guys. It has been a really poor week for news, both tech and in film. So we're just kind of having a conversation on this, because this film is coming out and it is getting all this accolade already. Everybody is talking about Tomorrow when the war began, and they're saying this could be the savior of the Australian film industry.
No, I don't think so. Sorry. sorry, I've seen that trailer and the acting is piss poor.
I do, and somebody has said at least the chick from Neighbors is hot. Yes, she might be, but she's a terrible actress. Yeah. You know, and
I don't think there's no one movie that's going to save the Australian movie.
No, it's a mindset industry needs.
Yeah, exactly. They need to change the way that they think about films.
First thing they need to do is start thinking of it as an industry.
Well, I've got a better idea. How about thinking about the that? Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I've got that. It's in the show notes. That's for the after show.
If you want to fix the movie industry, create a movie industry that's about people wanting to create film. That to me is the biggest problem here. Every movie I go to see is every single one of these people in the movies, the director, the set designers, everybody trying to get out of Australia. Mm. And
if you're trying to make a career in it.
And that's the problem. It's like, make this country worth working in, and then you won't have a problem because
If somebody offers you a big budget movie in America, absolutely, you're going to be like, no, I'm not going to take that because I want to make the Australian
movie.
No, dude, absolutely. You're obviously not going
to
do that.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is it doesn't have to be a place where there should be no industry here that people want to stick around for. Like, there's just...
I think the first thing we need to do is change the mentality in this country and make it that you are required to actually make a film that makes money to start with. All right. As I say, start thinking about it as a business, as an industry. And then we would actually then require you to actually produce some quality work. Because we have the funding mentality in this country, exactly. Nobody feels obligated to make any money. So these films come out. Josh and I will be reviewing in the next couple of weeks a film called The Loved Ones, which we saw, which we're not going to get into right now because it's a whole show to itself. But it really did epitomize what's wrong with the Australian industry. And we will talk about it. Josh is starting to fume. And we will talk more about that in the coming weeks when the film... The film doesn't come out till October. This is why we're not talking about it yet, because there's no point in talking about it this early. But the point is that this film comes out, even if it makes no money at the box office, everybody goes, oh, isn't it wonderful? You got something made. And that's the problem. We pat each other on the back for getting a film made rather than for being a good film.
Oh, don't worry.
I think the problem is the patting on the back of...
Yeah, and you know what? It's something that Mirren actually said, which is a very relevant point, which she said, the day that Australia embraces something like the Razzies will be the day that we know that they're stepping in the right direction. Margaret Pomerantz actually said, no, we could never have something like the Razzies in Australia because we wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And that's the problem.
And it's just, that show would go on for so long. There's not enough TV time to have the Razzies in Australia.
But yeah, that's the problem, though, is because we don't want to offend anybody. And it even gets to a point where... You know, we have to really sit there and go, do we really can the loved ones because, you know, the industry is so small? No, of course we do. Oh, we have to be as honest as we can be.
All I'm going to say about that show is when we do the loved ones, everyone in the chat room...
Stand by.
Wear sunglasses because I will roast your TV screen.
And Calicinta said, we have excellent movie production studios here. I think we need to add proper incentives for people to make movies here.
Well, they tried to. They tried to make Green Lantern here, and then they
and the government shat on them. The government shat on them because of the tax and let's face it, people used to come here and shoot because our dollar was a lot weaker. It was a lot cheaper to shoot here. Our dollar is almost on parity with the American dollar right now. So you have to offer, like New Zealand does, tax incentives for them to come and shoot here. Green Lantern. We almost had Green Lantern here. We almost had back in the 80s. We almost had Hook and Jurassic Park here. Equity got in the way on those ones. We have lost many productions over the last few years because we sit there and we go, oh, well, we don't want to be considered Mexicans with mobiles. We want more active thing. But the Americans don't just want to use it for a shooting location. Mm. And if it's going to employ crew, great, let them use it. Because that will keep their crew employed, which will then have them around for when we want to shoot our own productions.
Seriously, half of what money's left in New Zealand is literally only because of Lord of the Rings merchandise still there. I'm sorry, but it's true. It's like movies like this will do nothing bad for your situation.
And didn't we have some big movie filming here soon? There is a rumor going around the Avengers might be shot here. Mm.
I imagine that that'll be a rumor until the Australian government figures out that
were supposed to have Justice League Mortal.
I'm so glad that movie died.
Well, glad or not that the movie died, I think the movie was a flawed idea. But George Miller is a good director and a good producer, and he was going to employ an awful lot of people with that film. Mm. And you sit there and go, and he had a lot of really hard things to say about the industry when that all fell apart, because he blames the Australian industry wholly and squarely for killing that film off, because this was a go project. They were casting it, you know, and then it just died.
They were casting it badly, but they were casting it.
That's a whole side note, all right?
I find really weird is that, like, The Proposition. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't really like it, but it's amazingly filmed. And basically, all you have to do is take a camera out into the outback and turn it on, and you've got an amazing shot.
Yeah.
Well, it's pointed at the ground.
I don't know if you've there's an Australian film that came out last year, actually, probably even the year before now, called Monkey Puzzle. Which is about a bunch of campers, hikers who go into the Blue Mountains and get lost. And basically, it becomes a survival film. Not the best film ever made, but Jake and I reviewed it way back in the early days. And it was actually surprisingly better than we thought it was going to be. But the one thing I will give it is it looked magnificent.
Hmm.
It just looked beautiful. It was shot on like Super 16 or something like that.
If you have a decent camera, looked fantastic. Because we have such an amazingly unique landscape.
Exactly.
Which is
nowhere
never
else
used.
In the world looks like this.
Never used. Like, you can go out to the middle of Australia and you can see the horizon in every direction.
Yeah. Mm.
And nobody goes out there to film movies.
No, that's one of the saving graces to Australia when it came out, was it looks pretty. You know, I mean, the outback and everything, it all looks very pretty. We need to come to terms with the fact that at the moment, the standard of training for our actors sucks. NIDA sucks, quite frankly. I mean, this is hard because we have a friend of the show who's a NIDA student. But really, I mean, this is getting into controversial territory. But NIDA teaches theater, and they talk about their film and television component. We've actually known people who've gone through NIDA, and they literally get 2 weeks of film and television training or training in front of a camera. The rest of it is all theater. Well, training for theater, quite frankly, is training for unemployment. There isn't that much theater happening. We need to train for where the work is. The work is in television and film. And these actors are coming out going, believing that they are greater than thou, believing that they are completely, fully formed, ready-to-go actors. And let's face it, actors need to train constantly, forever. Al Pacino still does classes, okay? Because you need to workshop. You need to work on your skills. Mm. It's like you can't expect a ballerina to go up on point if they haven't danced for 6 months. Right? So they need to train, just like a ballerina, just like anybody else needs to train. But the NIDA doesn't believe in that. NIDA trains you, sends you out with your certificate, and basically says, you're an actor now. Go forth.
Go and act.
Go and act. Things. You know? You and it's like, and that's the wrong.
Damp on your hand. That's
it. And we sit there and go, oh, but NIDA has produced, you know, Cate Blanchett, and it's produced Russell Crowe, and it's
and
produced
Sam Worthington.
Not Russell Crowe. Sam Worthington said this, they're interchangeable. Russell Crowe has no training. But we sit there and it's true, he has no training. He came out, you know, went in and goes, I want to be in the movies, goddammit. You know, and he went in the movies, right? But I still think
he's probably got more acting skill than.
Well, what he's got is a lot of natural talent, but what's happening is that's starting to wear thin. Because without training, without skills,
well, he's been cast
it,
as
it can
Russell
only carry
Crowe.
You so far. Exactly,
he's been cast as Russell Crowe in every film,
except when he has to do something different, like in A Good Year, and he puts on that British accent that is so laughable that you sit there and go, "What the hell are you doing?" You know. Anyway, the point is that for every one successful NIDA graduate who comes out and does amazing work, there are hundreds
who are useless.
And so I just look at it and go, we need to improve our level of training. We need to improve our quality. We need to make it so that if a film fails, you don't work again.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing is, you can't just keep funding people and hoping some shit will finally stick to the wall. You know, let's get a core of quality and then we can expect more out of the industry. The problem is nobody expects anything. And the problem is Australians don't even like their own films. That's where it's gotten to. You talk to Australians and they go, oh, I don't go to Australian films.
Well,
you know, it's like, well, if you're not going to the Australian films, nobody else in the world is, so, you know.
Animal Kingdom didn't do very well here.
Yeah, but it's getting great crits
really
in
well
America. Yeah, great crits in America. I actually want to see that. I'm curious to see that.
I have not seen it yet. But I admit, when it came out, I was like, that trailer looks interesting. It's an Australian film. Not on the top of my list.
No, it's kind of sad. I think, whoa, hello, what happened there? I think it's kind of sad, the state of the industry in this country at the moment. And I want it to be better. I live here. I would like to see better films coming out of this country.
I'd love to be proud of the movies.
And this is the thing about the not quite Hollywood that I'm going to talk about with Brad. And this, I mean, we'll talk about this on his show as well. But the thing, and what we talked about in our review originally when we did this film, what's really interesting about this film is it's such a great period of film. Yes, the films were crap. Don't get me wrong. It was exploitation nonsense. But they were so much fun to watch.
Well,
because they were trying something different. You know, they were trying to make action films and horror films and thrillers, and they were really just balls to the wall, just trying everything they could, you know? And now we don't try that anymore. Now we're lucky if a film like Tomorrow When the War Begins comes out.
We want ourselves taken seriously, and the problem is that we've tried so hard to make ourselves taken seriously that no one cares.
But it's not just a matter of that, it's also what will get funded.
I think that's
if you turned around and said, I want to make Turkey Shoot today, funding bodies would laugh you out of the office. You say, I want to make a kitchen sink drama about the human condition and you know, ex-junkies who, you know, sit around a sink and talk all day long. They go, oh, sounds wonderful. Let's fund that. You know, and that's what we fund in this country.
Yeah.
You know? So I just, let's get away from the funding mentality. We can make cheap films now. The digital era has brought with it the ability that we can turn out really cheap, high-quality films. We just need the people to embrace that and say, screw the funding. Let's just do this independently. Yeah.
I've been on films like the one that, like that you mentioned with the kitchen sink drama, and I find it really strange that nobody kind of went, this is not very good.
It's boring.
In the whole, like, from script to pre-production to getting funding, which apparently is really easy to have something like that, to getting funding to filming, and then they release it, and it gets shown once.
And the thing about the funding, though, is
and also lucky if it goes on
the
a festival.
The whole thing about funding is also such a con, anyway. Because, and this leads you to, you know, the level of quality in this country. Think about it. Well, how do you get funded? You submit your script to the funding body. They say, "Great, we're going to fund you. We're going to give you $100,000." All right, but the first thing that has to happen is a funding body script doctor is hired to come in and rewrite your script. They're paid out of the money that they gave you. So that $100,000, suddenly you lose like $20,000 of it because it's going to this ghostwriter. And then you got to consider all of these writers that the funding body are actually putting onto you are all failed writers who work for the funding body.
Actually, so I want that job. $20,000?
Or whatever. I'm pulling numbers out of my ass. But, you know, the point is that they're getting paid out of your budget that they've given you to fund their own writers to come in and help re-doctor your scripts. But these guys aren't people who are getting their stuff worked. They're people who are obviously not working at the moment, and they're just shadow writing everybody else's. It's something wrong with the entire system. The system is broken. It's broken. Fix it. Now, with that being said, something else that is broken is the Expendables, as we talked about last week. But I got to play this way. That we put this on the site a few days ago because this made me laugh out loud. This is a trailer for the Expendables, but this is from collegehumor.com. And this is an 8-year-old explaining the Expendables as only an 8-year-old. Quite frankly, I think his review is better than ours. So
get him on the show.
I'm going to leave the mics open for this one because I think we might want to have a comment on this. But here is an 8-year-old explaining the Expendables.
I know you're probably all like, oh, another action movie. Pretty cool, I guess. But shut up one second. Like, everyone will be there. Rocky, the guy from Crank, Jet Li, Ultimate Fighter guy, Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you're all probably like, oh, but Bruce Willis and Arnold are old. They can't fight. Well, they can still wear suits and say cool stuff.
I promise.
So shut up. You don't know anything. So now you're thinking, that's all the cool tough guys we could fit in a movie. Then bam! Stone Cold Steve Austin, he's gonna fight Rocky. And they'll all be on like this one super team and have skulls on the motorcycles and get skull tattoos because they're tough and back tattoos hurt. And they'll throw knives and drive planes and smash cars through windows because Rocky doesn't care how much damage he causes as long as crime pays. Then meanwhile, Frank 2 guy will be all like wearing hats and making out with girls. And him and Rocky are like best friends. But not like how girls have best friends. They're like friends that kill people. And they'll be doing stuff with bags of money. Guys will be telling them to put down their guns. Like, put your guns down! And Rocky will look at all the guys, and none of them even care. He's just gonna talk about how to kill the bad guys. Then they will. And then this will happen. And then,
what happened to you?
Got my ass kicked.
It's gonna be the best movie ever.
All right, now, I mean, that just sums it up as far as I'm concerned. That is just the ultimate review for the Expendables.
Well, that's the 8-year old. It's the 8-year old and all of us coming out and being like, this is why this movie will be better than anything
well,
you can
what's
make.
What's that line where he says, Rocky doesn't care about destroying things?
You know, though, it does. It always it saddens me a little bit when we talk about, you know, sort of the state of Australian cinema and, you know, how, you know, sort of we try and break it down on an intellectual level why, you know, like it doesn't work, and then the next movie we, you know, upsell is The Expendables.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying that America makes nothing but quality films.
If we can write crap films in Australia, why can't we write that kind of crap film?
We used to, though, and that's the thing. We just don't anymore. I don't know what the hell happened to this industry. And speaking of crap films, let's move into a film review. Because
gloriously,
I think we have the ultimate in crappy films. Because this week we went to see Piranha 3D.
Good Lord.
Directed by Alexander Aja and written by Pete Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg, based on the 1978 Roger Corman-produced film Piranha, directed by Joe Dante and written by John Sayles, which of course in itself was a ripoff of Jaws, directed by Steven Spielberg and written by Peter Benchley. It stars Elizabeth Shue, Ving Rhames, Jerry O'Connell, Stephen R. McQueen, Adam Scott, Christopher Lloyd, Richard Dreyfuss, Dina Meyer, Jessica Solzer, I think her pronunciation, Kelly Brook, and just for good measure, we have porn stars Riley Steele, Gianna Michaels, and Ashlyn Brooke.
I wouldn't say that Richard Dreyfuss stars in the film.
He's actually listed in the main credits.
Yeah, I know, which shows you something.
And the wonderful thing about it is I actually didn't realize until looking at the credits what his character's name was, which was Matt Hooper, which is his name in Jaws.
So, oh, that's awesome.
He's singing the song that he's singing.
And he's singing the song in Jaws. So I think Slash Roomcast pointed off and said, maybe it's assuming that, you know, Matt Hooper didn't actually die and he's actually gone to retire and he's living on a lake.
That man has terrible luck.
Anyway, every year the population of Sleepy Lake, Victoria explodes from 5,000 to 50,000. Which doesn't make sense as well, because in the trailer they say we have 200,000 or so. They can't make up their minds on what the number is. But
I don't
anyway,
think they care.
5,000 to 50,000 for spring break, a riot of sun and drunken fun. But this year there's something more to worry about than hangovers and complaints from local old-timers. A new type of terror is about to be cut loose on Lake Victoria after a sudden underwater tremor sets free scores of the prehistoric man-eating fish. An unlikely group of strangers must band together to stop themselves from becoming fish food for the area's new razor-tooth residents. And to just highlight all of this, we will put on the trailer for you. So this is Piranha 3D.
See that gap right there?
Yeah.
Quake opened that up. Now it's a connecting passage.
Descending fissure.
Oh my God. It's at least 200 feet, Novak. Sam?
Something bit me!
Sam, what are you seeing down there?
Oh my God.
Sam!
It's like this body's been in the water for weeks.
I want to know what the hell this thing is doing in my lake.
Is that a piranha?
This particular piranha vanished 2 million years ago.
I'm thinking about closing the lake.
There's us and there's 20,000 kids. You do the math.
Take it off!
The sheriff has declared an emergency.
Don't worry, we got Pete over here!
Piranha hunt in packs. The first bite draws blood. The blood draws the pack.
I'm going to start this by saying that this was probably, hands down, the most stupid film I have seen.
Thank God you said it like
all
that.
All year. However, I will add to that that I had a great deal of fun. I did. I can't help myself. It was
I definitely did as well. I definitely can't But I definitely can't say anything apart from that. I definitely think my review is going to be the harshest, but yeah. Let's go. All
right, I love this movie. I think it was great. I thought it was fucking great. I went, like, you can see from the trailer, it's going to be just girls and piranhas and gore and, you know, boobs. And that's exactly what it was.
3D boobs.
And it was in 3D. It was just so gratuitous and
let's
hilarious.
Just add something to that really quickly, though. I do have to straight, because I did find out something yesterday that I was not aware of, because I actually thought this was shot in 3D. This is a post-convert. And it is a damn good post-convert. If they can make all post-converts look like that, then post-converting has a future.
Like, the 3D for me wasn't the selling point for the movie. I mean, there was a few...
No, granted, and the 3D, half the time it's like people vomiting into the camera, and you know, it's like, you know, they really, they knew they were going, see, the difference I think with this and Clash of the Titans is that they knew this was going to be in 3D, so they shot it like it was a 3D film, even though they weren't shooting with 3D cameras, and
Clash of the Titans were also bad, and this was...
Yeah, but I'm talking about the convert in general, though. The post-convert on Clash of the Titans was awful. It was just dreadful. I mean, it looked like Viewmaster. It was terrible.
It
right?
was.
This actually felt like it was a 3D film. And I give it to you. The 3D on My Bloody Valentine was much better because I shot it as a 3D film. And I thought this was shot as a 3D film. And there were moments where I kind of went, boy, you know, that's a bit shaky. Like the chain link fence at one point looks really terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Hard to...
It looks terrible.
It was really hard for me. I actually... My eyes started to detach when looking at the credits.
The credits really felt like they were separated.
It hurt, man. Yeah. I was looking at it going, oh, look somewhere else.
Yeah, well, and so we do know now that it was a post-convert.
Right.
I do have to say that it was a really, really good post-convert. Mm. However, is it worth $3D dollars?
No.
$20.
No. No. I think Callum said it best when we got out of the movie and said nothing is worth $20.
Yeah, no movie is worth $20.
No movie is worth $20.
I don't know. We paid $26 or something for Avatar in IMAX.
Yeah, that wasn't worth $26. I'm sorry. My experience the second time at a different cinema was better.
That's true. And in fact, I have said this on the show as well, that I actually didn't like Avatar at IMAX and I preferred it on a regular real D screen. I thought the 3D was fabulous, but I would rather see it on a real D screen, and I would rather go somewhere like the Ritz where it's only going to cost me $16. You know, now for the American listeners out there, they're saying $20 because, you know, for them 3D is like $16 or $17. There is a monetary difference here. But 3D carries a premium price, and you have to ask yourself that the film really needs to be something special in 3D to warrant a 3D premium price. Let's forget the $20. If you could have seen this in 3D at the Ritz, for instance, for $16, would it have been worth 3D prices, or do you still think it should be just a 2D film?
I'm glad it was.
Yeah, no, there's a couple of really good moments that I will bring up in my review of it that, I definitely think we're worth watching it in 3D.
Well, we're also going to have a spoiler section on this one as well, because there's a lot of individual scenes we want to talk
they
about,
made it so. Worthwhile, but they obviously knew it was going to be a 3D movie when they were making it. And I think it was a great 3D movie. You know what?
Well, look, alright.
Meant to be that.
Go for it, Josh.
Look,
carried a new one.
No. It's not going to be that. Look, the first things I want to say is, number one, it is definitely a 3D movie in the way that 3D has always been used for. It is the quintessential 80s-style 3D movie, which is that 3D is used as a gimmick to bring things out on screen at the right times to give you a bit of a joyous moment, be it what it may, be it a jumping piranha or something else that may be boob-sized. That aspect of it was fine, and I love it for that. It was a rubbish horror film with a high budget, which is fantastic. I have no problems with that. A few scenes are mentioned that I won't go into detail on, but I will just say scenes to watch out for if you decide to go and spend your money on this film. Number one, Jerry O'Connell, just in general. The man is an absolute legend in this film. He plays a coked-out porn director. He is hilarious. He is hilarious when he dies, and the moment that we see the last of him on screen brought nothing but laughs out of me.
Intentional laughs, too.
Intentional laughs, yep, absolutely. The piranhas were really well done, and I like the wounds, like actually blood style. I thought that they really got that right, because it was kind of like the damage was a lot less kind of them jumping out of the water to kill people, like it was kind of more for me in the original. I thought that the wonderful scene shot to classical music of two young ladies and... there are many amazing
features. What is it? The Kelly Brook and Riley Steele scene was quite something.
That was just beautiful. And I mean actually beautiful. Like, I'm not even talking from the quintessential male punch. It is
when you want the malleable 3D TV.
Yeah, no, that was a scene where, like, it was funny because I was talking with Celine after the movie, and she said to me, you know, like, it was very gratuitous and we got to see particular parts, and I was like, we actually did? She was like, yeah. I'm like, I actually have to admit I wasn't looking. I was just looking at the beauty of what was on screen that I was...
I was looking at what Celine was looking at.
I was looking at it just going, oh, that's so pretty.
That's what I was thinking as well, but I was looking at a different part of the screen to you.
All right, we're probably going to earn our explicit tag this show purely because we're probably going to say the word boobies an awful lot, because this film has an awful lot of boobies. We actually counted...
Do we spoil it?
16. Oh, 16 boobies. 16 boobies were actually exposed, and many more were partially exposed.
Now, I want to say...
There was a bit of a... Yeah, some of them were like half, so we... 16 full boobs.
And then there was a lot of bikinis and wet t-shirts.
Now, this is where I actually have to say I have a small problem with this film. And I know you guys are going to go, no, you're completely wrong, and I don't care. There was a little bit too much.
You're completely wrong.
No.
No such... thing.
You're completely wrong.
Let me explain my point before you shoot me down. I'm not saying that there is a problem with boobs, and I have no problem with
the
it,
show title.
But there was at least three or four times in this film where I actually sat there and went, can we go somewhere with this? Because I'm sick.
I thought they were.
But that's... I actually got sick and tired of just the same shots over, like... the floats with people dancing. Because...
That's the point of the film.
Lots of sexy people who get shredded.
It's obviously it's not a proper horror movie. Obviously, you're not going to be scared of this.
There's no scare. Let's put this right out. There's no scares in this movie.
There's no scares. It will fill your blood quota in the first 5 minutes of when shit goes wrong.
The tension is derived basically from, like, are they going to get out of the water before the piranhas get them? And that's it.
Yeah, okay, and there's not even that many times that happens.
In our chat room, by the way, I just want to throw this out of there. In our chat room, we've got, I've just got to backtrack this a little bit. We have Delta Knight saying, is it worth seeing just for boobies? Autonomous is saying, ha ha ha, you guys are hilarious. 16 full boobies. And Northy says, the show title should be called Boobies, 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 Boobies. We can't because unfortunately iTunes will censor us. But,
that'd be a good show title.
How about 16 big jugs?
Oh, that's good. I like that. And Numero Zero, though, has summed it up for me, who said, what isn't worth seeing just for boobies? And I agree.
Okay, maybe I wanted a bit more horror and a little bit less of that, but that's a personal thing, and so there I can't really rubbish the movie because it didn't set out to accomplish that. It set it out to show lots and lots of boobs and watch people die.
But see, I knew and this it in advance. Did
that. I just assumed that was what I was going to do. This movie's trash, and it knows it's trash. And that's why it's glorious.
Just before we went to see it, I said, there's no way you can hate this movie. Because it is not, it's wearing what it is on its sleeve. It's not trying to pretend to be anything other than what it is. It is this trashy gore fest about piranhas eating scantily clad people.
Okay, I will say one thing, Calisynth. No, I have to say the acting was definitely not the weakest part of this
film. And Elizabeth Shue actually puts in a very good performance.
It's
I thought
it's
Ving Rhames did as well. Yeah. Then again, I always think Ving Rhames puts in a good performance.
Ving Rhames is just amazing. And you know what? Like, I mean, as much as I wanted more Ving Rhames. That was one thing.
I will agree with you there.
I was very disappointed that he gets like two scenes in this entire film. Three, maybe.
I'll wait till the spoiler.
And I also quite liked... what's the actor's name again? The scientist. Adam Scott. Yeah. I quite liked Adam Scott as well. I thought Adam Scott was...
Jumping on the boat just made no sense to me. He's just like, there are thousands of people dying here, blood everywhere. It's like, I'll come with you to rescue your family. You shouldn't be following.
No, I just love the fact that he vaguely feels like he's forgotten his script in the last few scenes because he stands around in the background just kind of going, yeah, oh, wow, yeah, you could have been, yeah, okay. It's like he's completely incoherent in the background, but he does it with such conviction. Yeah.
He perfectly maintains what it would have been to act in that sort of era of movies, that kind of 80s era. It's kind of like, scripts? We don't need scripts. Just get in there and make it seem like you're supposed to be there.
I actually really... I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. Yes, I think it was way too overpriced.
I would
rather have it come to the Ritz because I could have got it cheaper. But I got to say, it gave me exactly what I was expecting it to give me. You know?
I will say that my final words for this movie will stay the same now as they will be when we talk about it then, which is that I can't wait for the sequel.
No, absolutely.
It's just the way it ends. You're just sitting there going, oh, come on, and the man. I gotta wait?
And the highest praise I can give to it is that when I saw My Bloody Valentine, which has exceptional 3D. Mm. I mean, I saw it at the cinema and just the 3D just blew me away. And I had so much fun watching the film. It's just camp junk. But I had so much fun watching the film. And the 3D was sensational and everything else. But I actually came out of that film thinking, I will never watch this film again. I don't want to see it in a non-3D format because the film isn't very good. It's the 3D that sells that film. I will watch Piranha again. When it comes out on DVD, I would watch it again because it's funny. You know, it's funny and there's great boobs in it and the gore is sensational. I mean, let's face it, the practical effects work in it was great. The CG piranhas were passable and passable to good. And the practical effects, all of the bloodletting.
After the massacre, I'd say, there was a lot of effects on screen at the same time and they were all really disgusting.
And they were all really, really good. They were really
Done. And I missed out one of my favorite scenes, which was seeing Eli Roth get his head fucking smashed in by a boat.
Yes.
Booyah!
Not a big fan of Eli Roth as an actor.
No. That is for your part in fucking Bastards. Yep.
Wasn't that bad in Bastards?
Yeah, he was.
No, he was. I'm sorry.
He was Bear Jew, man. Gotta love Bear Jew. Exactly.
When he opened his mouth, I wish he hadn't.
All right, we're going to take this into a spoiler zone. Before we do go into a spoiler zone, let's just give a quick roundup. Would you recommend it to others? We'll start with Shane.
I didn't even get to my review.
Oh, but... Shane, please. you've been sitting there so patiently and quietly, I didn't know if you had anything to add. Please, tell us what you thought.
Just a quick one. I'd say I probably like this more so for the gore work and the makeup and stuff that was in that. The thing that disappointed me the most was there is no proper ending.
Yeah. Just
like bang and it's gone.
That is a point, yes. And that's one of the reasons why I think Josh said we want a sequel.
Yeah. Well, this is why, and I was going to weigh in on this when we got to the second part of the film, which is why I hadn't brought it up yet, which was the fact that I want to talk about this when we get into spoilers. So
okay, great. Yeah. So, but overall, would you recommend it?
Not for the price of it being in 3D. Right. But if you can find it somewhere cheaper in 3D, then probably yes.
Okay. Yeah. Callum?
Most definitely. Most definitely. Go see this in Scott Pilgrim. There's not a lot else out at the moment. This is the most fun I've had in the movies in a long time.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's fantastic.
Josh?
Only to horror fans. Anyone else will not like this film.
Really? You think
so?
I think it'll actually appeal to the non-horror fans more than horror fans, because it's not a horror film. It's not scary enough for them.
No, when I mean horror fans, I mean fans of gore.
I think this is a good intro film for people to get into horror, because they watch this and go, oh, horror films aren't so bad. You know?
No, actually, a lot of people I know would turn around and be like, what is this shit? Can I leave? if you're not a fan of stupid cinema, if you're that percentage of people that go out to watch dramas and the Australian kinds of film and, you know, sort of things with a little bit more content, you're going to hate this film because there's nothing in it.
I don't think you can just generalize and say if you like dramas, you're going to hate this film.
I didn't mean it like that, dude.
So, say the movie show people, Margaret Pomerantz and David, what's he thinking?
Stratton.
Have they ever reviewed this yet?
I'm not sure.
I would love to know what they gave this.
But they obviously like serious dramas and things like that. But if you've watched them, they like crap.
Scott Pilgrim was a really interesting review because Margaret didn't like it, but David did.
Yeah.
So
that's aimed at a bit more of a smaller audience than Piranha.
But I mean the kind of person that I could watch one of these films with, or that I know had seen them. It's like if you're not a fan of gore, then if you're not a fan of gore, or you're against the idea of like lots of boobs on screen, then don't go see it. If you do like either of those two things, then you'll probably have a blast.
Yeah. If you just want a stupid piece of entertainment where you just go, it's going to be exactly what they advertise. It's not going to have any secret or hidden messages. It's not trying to be anything other than scantily clad people or naked people being shredded by fish.
I love Northie's comment. If you've never seen a film before, you may enjoy this film for the novelty of seeing a film.
All right, I would actually recommend this to people. I would say that if you just want to go and have some fun, don't take it too seriously.
Don't take it seriously at all.
Don't take it. There's no seriousness.
If you try and take this film seriously, your head will explode.
But I would say
there's
that
a certain general's warning in the bottom corner of the poster if you actually look carefully.
But I would actually say to you that it is not worth full 3D. Not 20. It's not worth $20. It's not. It is worth. And look, the 3D is fun, but it's not absolutely necessary. Mm. So
it's only in 3D, isn't it?
I think it might only be playing in 3D at the moment. But
that's how they get you.
Yeah, that's how they're going to get you. But anyway, if you can find it at a discount house in 3D, go for it, like the Ritz or something like that. It's not at the Ritz, unfortunately. That's why we didn't go there. I would have much preferred to have seen it there. We're going to move into some spoilers here because it's really hard to talk about our favorite bits in this one. We really want to talk about the kills and stuff like that. So we're going to go into some spoilers. So for the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk about spoilers. And so we'll see how we go. And now we've got to keep this kind of tight because we've got our lists to go as well, which, funnily enough, are boob-related. So we'll come back to that.
It's a boob-themed show.
It's a boob-themed show. Let's go around the table very quickly and just say, Josh, what were your favorite parts of this thing?
Favorite parts of this thing, like I said, Eli Roth's head being mashed in, that was a personal favorite. One, because it's an awesome scene, like watching his head kind of like... it's like a small tube of toothpaste. It's quite spectacular. As I said before, Jerry Connell, just in general, he is awesome when he's playing his role. He's awesome when he dies. And the final scene where we see the floating penis it quite possibly put me in more hysterics than I've been in.
Let's talk about the penis for a minute. I think the penis is...
best shot of 3D ever.
Best shot of 3D. Best shot in the film, quite frankly. I thought it was so funny when he goes, "They took my penis." And that's not good enough that they did that. We then cut to underwater and we see the penis floating in the water and then gets eaten.
And then regurgitated.
How awesome is that? But just prior to the penis, we see the silicon bags from the girl who was eating her silicon boobs floating to the top.
That's actually one thing that I had a little bit of a problem with, is just how like bizarre... like, it wasn't so much of a feeling that kind of put the movie down for me, but I really struggled with kind of pace of whether I was supposed to be laughing or taking it seriously.
I think you were supposed to be. You were supposed to be laughing.
No, but when 3D I mean penis. That, like, as in... I'm not meaning the 3D penis. I mean, but it's like, because, like, it would cut straight from the scene of the floating bags immediately into people being eviscerated, like, very seriously. And I'm like...
that didn't make you laugh?
No, not laugh. I was like, gore. Yeah, no, like, but it wasn't. But it was more just that I'm like, wow, that's an odd switch. Like, you know, usually there's a lead up where you.
Well, I think having French sensibilities, Alexander Aja has basically done the same sort of thing that Luc Besson did with Fifth Element, which basically has this very odd offbeat sense of humor, and said, if we're going to make something about killer fish, we're going to have some fun with this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he's very like sort of. It's like he got ADD when he was making this film, and he just kind of goes, funny bit, gore, boobs, penis, funny bit, fish, eating legs.
You can actually see him sitting there just like, all right, now, all right, we're going to have this, and then we're going to have that, and then we're going to have this. Move that, put that over there. That's the way I kind of felt about it. I was like, wow, the pacing of this is amazing. Other favorite gore scene, a bit where a chick's being demolished underwater and the fish actually comes out. And it like breaks its way through.
I thought
the
you were
going to
talk
face.
About the girl who had her hair trapped in the outboard motor.
That was my final one. That was
There's a sequence in the film where a girl's got her hair caught on an outboard motor that won't start. She's trying to get her hair off. The guy finally gets it started, and of course, it just rips the top.
I was expecting chips and blood and bits to fly up. I wasn't expecting her face to actually like pull off the front of her head.
It was pretty gross.
I was like, wow, that was intense.
The practical grossness, the practical gore in this film is phenomenal. It's a lot gorier.
I made the joke in the car that literally I think they just went past every university in America and just went, are you doing visual effects? Do you like horror? Get in the truck. There's
well,
not
it turns
much
out it was actually done by Nick Otero, the guy who does a lot of the zombie films, and he was one of Tom Savini's. He did Army of Darkness and so forth. And it's his team that did it, and it doesn't surprise me because that's the kind of stuff that he specializes in. Mm. So, but boy, they worked overtime on this. In particular, that massacre scene where the beach party is happening, and there are literally hundreds of bodies being
blood like, just
the
by
thing
the
that
gallon.
I was very impressed with was when they're carrying the two people are carrying the girl out of the water and then she just breaks in half.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
and then she's still going and then she dies and I was like, That's like seamless. Like I couldn't tell if that was a puppet or CG.
Well, that's an amazing piece of work. I'll make you a bet it was CG. Mm. The top half is probably the girl. She's probably wearing green. Mm. Bottom half, they drag her out, and then they digitally add in the legs falling away.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. No, that was
but really well
insane.
Done. Insane. And that's the thing. The CG work is good to brilliant in this film, and the practical effects work is brilliant. I mean, the gore is just sensational. Anything to add to spoilers, Shane?
Yes, two favorite bits. One was when the blonde lady gets cut in half.
Oh, yes! which was number 16, 15 and 16.
Yeah, that was the last two boobies.
That was the 15 and 16 on the boobies, where the thing slices her in half, cutting her bikini off first.
Yeah.
And then the body
falls. It's just weights, and it's just like boobs.
Yeah.
And then she just falls apart. It's like, oh, that took away the good boob shot.
But when she falls in the water and you see her top half sinking, there's a boob and a half boob. But we didn't count them extra. We didn't count the same.
No, because she'd already
been
counted. You can't count her again. She's already been counted.
I wanted to point out.
Oh, wait, Shane had another one?
Yeah, the other bit was when the dumbass guy drives away in the boat.
And just kills like hundreds
of
people.
He's trying to escape. He's going, get out of my way, get out of my way. He's killing more people than the piranhas are by racing his boat through the populated area. Just wrong. There's
no real revenge shot from that.
No.
No, which was... Yeah, I know, but like I wanted to see that man get like decimated. That's the way horror movies are supposed to be. There's that
but
moral
this didn't
sensibility.
Follow
of
any rules? This
I disagree. I thought
the kids not being eaten.
And,
I thought
yeah,
the kids.
Too. I was waiting for at least one of the kids to get eaten because we had a spare.
Yeah. Exactly. There's
and Jerry O'Connell two, being killed. So, like, he was a dick all the way through the film. That's an exact
so
horror thing. Exactly. Like, I'm sorry, dude, but it did follow a lot of the traditional horror things. And if you go into
yeah,
a place
Kelly
looking
didn't
for
deserve
stuff,
to die.
Well, that has nothing to do with a horror-related situation. And no, I disagree, because classic horror tradition is that the hot girls always die.
No, classic horror tradition is sex equals death.
Yes.
And the main guy's girlfriend, who was making out with one of the porn stars, didn't die.
Yes, she did.
The main guy's girlfriend.
Oh, the girlfriend. Yeah, but she backed out of it, remember, because she had to go vomit. So
exactly. Yeah, but she was still making out with a girl, and traditionally it's like you have sex or you do something like that, and then you die.
Oh, yeah, no. But in a film
so
like
it
that,
obviously
it,
just,
yeah, I would have been happier if she
had died. It's a relative thing, though,
and
because everybody was doing that. So, you know, it's the new sensibility of the old traditions.
I thought Jerry O'Connell being... He even got threatened with legal action from the guy who runs Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
Because he said, I'm basing my character on him. And then his lawyers were like... And he went, okay, it's a fictional account of somebody who it resembles him. Yeah. And Jerry O'Connell was hilarious. He was so over the top. He was like the film. He was just ridiculous and fun. I thought it was interesting that the cameraman on the boat disappears halfway through the film.
Yeah, do we actually ever see what happened to him? No.
He's just not on the boat anymore. Once they pick up the kids, he's gone.
Maybe they couldn't afford both salaries.
Yeah, I mean, the penises and the people getting broken in half and everything you guys have said. It's just such a glorious film. You have to go see it.
I love it. It is great fun. It is just nonsense. And I will also give it to the filmmakers that they gave the piranha personalities. They were vaguely like comic relief in some places. So they had this, or Alexander Aja had this very odd sense of humor that he worked his way through the entire film, which could work and might not work. He walked a fine line, because if he makes it too comical, it just becomes silly. But he managed to pull it off. I think he managed to make a film that you just sit there and go, what's not to like? You know, what's to hate to this film, you know?
That's
I couldn't see this guy making a different kind of movie, but I could see him making a lucrative career out of this kind of movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
didn't he direct the Hills Have Eyes remake?
Yeah.
He definitely
which
wrote
I don't think was very good.
I thought the first one was alright. Second one.
I like the original.
The second one was trash, man.
I don't think you did the second one. It was
no,
just
the second one was one of those, you know, sort of wonderful things you get where you make a film and then some other company goes, let's just cash in on the title.
Yeah, that's one of those shameful things.
Yeah.
All right, well, if we've got nothing else to say about Piranha, anybody else got anything they want to add?
The sequel will be glorious. Bigger Piranhas.
Bigger Piranhas. Oh, yes, of course, we have the finale of this film, which, as Shane has already said, has no real ending, but we have established that there is Mummy and Daddy Piranhas now that are huge. So in the sequel,
I thought they could have gone bigger with the adult piranhas, though.
Yeah, but then you get into Jaws territory.
No. Look, I mean, I have no... No, but dude, think about... I want you to think about that for a moment. Seas of that size.
Yeah, but, like, if you're going to go ridiculous, boat-sized, swarms of boat-sized piranhas...
No, I'm sorry. No. Too big.
You get
what
into
I want to say
fish
is,
territory.
I was a little like, I mean,
from that,
and call it mildly cliche, but we were watching a horror film, so we never seem to do it any other way. And I'm with Shane. I don't think they ended it right. I would have liked to have seen them like drop a depth charge of some sort at the bottom of that thing and seal that hole off, and then find out that all the ones they have out there are going to kill them. It's kind of like you have the final confrontation that leads to something. And I'm sorry, that boat scene with the
why
kids
did they all
getting
die?
Off.
I don't get it.
What?
All the piranhas at the end. Sorry, I thought it was what you were talking about.
Oh, no,
yeah,
that was
the
just the ones around the boat.
They all die.
There's,
why
there's plenty
they
left.
Die?
There's plenty left.
Yeah, but
there
around
were...
the boat, though, why
around,
did
they all just go...
Oh, no, dude, they mentioned that. The dynamite fishing thing. If you send an explosion off underwater, it will kill every fish around it. So that's completely okay in the sense of it. But I would have liked to see them have an actual, like, resolution. That was not
what they
enough.
Should have done. My ending to it would have been... that they seal off the chamber so the lake is clear and they know that the lake is now clear, and then they work out, because the guy's a scientist, they work out that underground lake actually has tunnels going off all in other places.
Yeah, exactly.
And they know, oh, damn. And that leads to us opening up into another lake somewhere.
Yeah.
And that would have been a bigger resolution to the film. So, I think the ending leaves a lot to be desired. But then again, by then, who cared? Mm. I mean, that was the bottom line. We are going to, because we're running out of time quickly. We've actually already run out of time, but we're going to do this.
Oh, and one other special quote. As someone that does diving, everything that they did diving related must have had a good team on board, because there's nothing I can fault in that film. Almost all films that you watch that have any level of diving in it, I'll be like, you can't go that deep on that tank. You can't do that. That's unrealistic or whatever. Everything that they had, perfect gear, perfect use, perfect oxygen mixing. I was sitting there going, wow, that's unnecessarily
accurate.
except for the guy that went down that deep, you can't go with not wearing a wetsuit. For
It
would have been very cold in that cave.
Mm. Yeah.
Also, as somebody who's had a lot of experience with killer fish, everything about the killer fish was perfect.
No. Oh, dude, no. Sorry. Special quote. Even you know this has to be mentioned. Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, we forgot all about Christopher Lloyd. Oh, man. Christopher Lloyd has a cameo, and this is the scientist who basically reveals that these are prehistoric piranhas, and he is quite possibly the funniest thing I have seen in a long time, because he's doing his best Doc Brown.
Exactly. All they did was they got him in, and, like, the man's senile now. We all know it. He doesn't actually act anymore. You just put him in a location, and they've just drawn a little mustache on the front of him. It's so bad, it looks like it's made out of texture. And then they've basically just gone, okay, your motivation is in this tank, which is empty at the moment because it's CG, obviously. There's a giant piranha. And he's like, Brent Scott! What's going on? quick, film. He's on a roll now. It's everywhere! Look at it!
Yeah!
Runs off, grabs this giant slab of metal. Look! It's a fish on this rock! And everybody's just like,
piranha's been extinct for 2,000 years! 2 million years!
And that's why on the rock it was all digital CG, because it was just a giant rock he had picked up.
He's like, whatever he says, put it on there. With his bug eyes. His bug eyes look great in 3D, by the way.
The man is just absolutely awesome.
He's a legend. All right, we're going to kick through very quickly our top five list, our list of five for this week. We have to move through this pretty quick because we are running late.
Oh, yeah.
And how just late? In... Well, the show should have been over already. to continue with our theme of boobies, it occurred to us that our top five list, or our list of five this week, should be five top boob shots in horror movies.
Yeah.
All right. Boobies. And I personally have kept Piranha off the list.
Okay.
Because it's... too fresh. We've just seen this. And I will say that if we were going to put Piranha on this list, number one would have to be the mermaid swimming to classical music shot of the two girls underwater fondling each other while swimming around.
That was the inspiration for my concept.
And it was amazing.
There's 16 boobs and 4 buttocks.
And I'm not putting on my list, but that is definitely on the honorary mention. It says The Mermaid's Eating Piranha 3D between Kelly Brook and Riley Steele. Awesome, but it's not on the list. Okay? So, top 5 boob shots in horror movies, starting with Josh. By the way, before we go on, did you have a top 5 list?
Oh, no.
No, okay, so we'll sit chain out. Josh, number 5.
Okay, number 5. The movie itself has a lot of these sort of scenes at the start, but there's one particular scene with two girls in a back room of this particular place. Both girls look fantastic, and it was just, at the time, it was one of those scenes where I went, that is the best boobs I've seen in a horror film in a long time, which was Hostel. Two chicks, both take the tops off, fantastic boobs.
Fair enough. Callum.
My 5. I couldn't find a name because
I didn't look for names.
Oh, I have the names of everyone else.
Oh, I do too. Fine appreciation here.
I was finding it hard to find her on IMDb, the particular girl, but in Snakes on a Plane, are we counting that as a horror movie?
Yeah, that's a horror film. When they're having
sex in the toilet and the snakes come down and one of them bites
her
tongue and the other one bites the guy on the dick. I was like, I just thought it was great for the quality of the snakes. And it's just such a trashy film. I love these trashy films.
Trashy film is the word.
It's like boobs and then snakes and the snakes are biting the boobs. It's the same as Piranha. It's just like boobs and they're being eaten.
Okay, my number 5 goes to Leah Beldam. There's a household name for you. Leah Beldam, 1980, the girl in the bath in The Shining, who gets out and walks towards Jack Nicholson.
It was almost on my list.
The old lady?
Not the young one. The young lady. I saw The Shining when I was 13, I think. That scene had deep impact on me, let me tell you.
I don't want to know what kind of impact it had.
And the old lady scared the fucking crap out of me. Josh, number 4.
Number 4. Final probably 10 minutes of the film, probably one of the worst horror films of all time, but the two girls that are made digitally in this wonderful room that can give you whatever you want, which is a holographic room, conjures up these two girls that are camping, apparently, and for no apparent reason in front of our good friend Jason Voorhees, drop off their boobs, and Jason 10 is what I'm talking about. Yes. Space boobs.
Yes. Space boobs. That's the second time Jason X has made one of your lists.
Oh, dude, man, seriously, the film has a lot of qualities, even if it is a trashy film.
Fair enough.
Sorry, that corkscrew death is classic, really. Drops him on the thing.
And of course the scene that follows directly after the boobs, which is him then picking up the girls in the sleeping bag and beating them.
Which they did again in the remake.
What is this? A Delta Knight says Scream, where she's running away from the killer with her fake boobs out. No, that's a scary movie, not Scream.
Yeah, scary movie.
Okay, Callum, number 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have the years. I feel like I haven't done enough research.
I only have
Serena Vincent in Cabin Fever. The girl who, when they're like, oh, if we're going to die, we should obviously have sex first. And they're having sex.
Of course.
And she is not only like topless riding him, but then she scratches his back and all his skin comes off. And then afterwards he's putting like,
don't shake it down there when you're talking like that.
No, he puts like disinfectant on his penis and that because they both think that they've infected each other.
I thought this was about the boobs, though, dude.
Yeah, she's riding him and her boobs are everywhere. Okay. I just love the whole
scene. Yeah, no.
Enough said.
And she was also in Not Another Teen Movie. She was the topless girl in that.
Well, she's made a career of
having her boobs out.
All right, my number 4 is kind of old school here, and it's actually not even that great a scene, but because I saw it when I was like 12 on late night television, it burned itself into my psyche, which is Chantal Contori, Australian actress, terrible Australian vampire film called Thirst from 1979. Oh, she has a shower scene where she steps in the shower and she just had enormous norks. And
I think we should
norks?
Have like
a, what kind of old person
Australian film. I felt I should use an Australian term. All right, so Chantal Contori, 1979, Thirst. Unfortunately, she then gets covered in blood, so it kind of, it's a very short scene. Oh. Anyway, Josh, number 3.
It is one of the now most talked about returns to boobs in horror films. Like, it's kind of like, it is our generation's major horror film with boobs in it. The new Friday the 13th remake, the girl in that. Just look for her name. Her name is Giuliana Gulli. She just amazing.
Cool.
Just fantastic boobs.
Cool. Callum, number three.
See, I've been rating these in terms of, like, amount of horror, but with boobs. And you guys are doing them...
Yeah, no, best...
Quality
I
of
believe,
boobs with horror.
I believe the category exact was
best boobs in a horror movie.
All right, well, I thought... Anyway.
This You're just going to have to restructure it
This
now.
One, because it's one of my favorite horror movies, and it's just such a classic sex equals death thing. In Halloween,
yep.
PJ Souls,
oh, yes.
the girl...
Almost made my list.
Tries to have sex with Michael when he's wearing the sheet.
Yes.
And she gets the shit killed out of her.
She really
does. Killed out of her. Very good. Okay. My number three is actually from My Bloody Valentine in 2009. Betsy Rue has probably one of the bravest scenes put on film in the last 5 years, where not only does she have the sex scene, she then gets off and she's running around the car park trying to get the guy... Fully naked, head to toe, and it is like 5.5 minutes long or something like that, and she is just oblivious to the fact that she's naked.
I think that's like one of the
I think you would be if there was a man chasing you with a pickaxe.
And she's running around with a handgun at one point, she's still totally naked. He's gonna go, awesome
scene. I doubt that any thought on her mind at any stage was, man, I should really get some clothes on.
And I love the fact that the filmmakers didn't even tastefully try and frame it so you don't... No, big wide shots. No. Just keep it wide the whole time. So I've got to say, that scene was very, very pleasurable. Number two, Josh.
Number two, Dave. I know this one won't be on your list because it can't be, but a recent film that I was shown by you... And immediately went to the top of my list of this because the girl is one of the most attractive females I have ever seen in my life. And I'm leaving, you know, sort of the gross sexuality out of this. She is just a beautiful specimen of human being. She is
most
exactly
amazing.
What we think of when we think of the perfect looking girl, which is the girl from Life Force.
Yes, absolutely. And you're right, she can't be on my list because she's on the glorious
on the
bad list.
On the glorious.
So I won't include her. But yes, I think there is no doubt in my mind that she is probably the most perfect specimen of woman ever created.
I really need to see that film. Not just for the boobs, but I've heard so much about it.
Yes, you do. All right, number two, Callum.
This one's for the quality of the boobs. Natasha Henstridge in Species.
I'll pay that.
Not just one scene, just the whole movie. Which
it's an
is
obvious,
constantly
it's
getting
an obvious
her.
Choice, but I'll pay
But
that.
It's just, she's a very attractive woman.
She is.
And the whole movie she's getting naked, and it's also a good film. I liked it.
Matilda May is the name you're looking for, by the way, Josh.
Yes, thank you.
Matilda May.
I thought you would chime in for... Naturally.
Actually, no, funnily enough, my brain had switched off for a second. I'm going, yeah, the Life Force girl. Oh my God. Brain
movies.
Fuse? No, Matilda May. It just came to me. Okay, my number two is basically anything that has her in it, because in the 80s, she was pretty much topless in everything she did. But one particular example, 1985, Reanimator, Barbara Crampton on the table getting...
Wrong. Just plain wrong.
But Barbara Crampton was gorgeous, and she was naked in just about everything that she did. But that scene in particular will forever be burned into my head of the disconnected head between her legs.
Head from a head.
Head from a head. Absolutely. And rolling into our number ones, Josh...
Okay, this one in particular, though the scene, and let me explain that by saying this scene, I am not in any way condoning what happens in it. The scene itself is actually quite disturbing while you're watching the scene, but for actual quality of what you're seeing, I'm going to say Rona Mitra in Hollow Man.
Did she get raped?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
She does. Like, I'm saying, I'm not giving
you know what?
Any credit
you know
to
what
happens in the scene,
actually,
but she is beautiful.
I was actually going to put her on there. I was going to put that scene because she is awesome. And for some reason, I didn't. I think it was because I kind of went, is it really a horror film? Is it a thriller?
Oh, dude, no, it is a horror film. Come on. He kills people, and then there's
thriller,
blood all over the ground.
But
and
I pay that, yes.
Yeah,
she was hot.
Yeah, no, sorry.
I'm a big fan of Rona Mitra.
Yeah.
Big fan of Rona Mitra.
And
my big disappointment in the third Underworld film was the fact that she didn't take her top off. Anyway,
she doesn't have to do it in every film.
Yes, she has an obligation to the world. Number one, Callum. This is the most sexist thing we've ever done on this show. Can I just say
it
this?
It didn't occur to me at the time that this was even the episode.
It's all in good fun, though, ladies.
I am doing, and the reason I went into this and didn't even think about this is because for me it's not a matter of being sort of over into it. For me, it's just a complete love of the form and the fact that it is part of the horror genre. You can't knock it out of the horror genre.
There is a pity that Celine isn't on the show, because having a girl do this list with us would have actually given us a little bit more credibility. But yeah. Celine actually
Well, the episode is called Boobies, 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 Boobies. So.
Not necessarily.
We talk about other things too.
So speaking of boobies.
Number one.
Monica Bellucci in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes. Monica Bellucci in just about anything.
Monica Bellucci, even when she's got her top on.
Monica Bellucci when she's wearing Arctic weather gear. Monica Bellucci.
Monica Bellucci hidden under a blanket so you can't see any of her. She's
absolutely.
Still,
still gorgeous.
Yeah. Also, I like that film. But she's just... It's not particularly a horrific scene.
No, it's
but
vampires, it's Dracula. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Okay. Mm. But yes, I pay that one completely. And my number one... In fact, I even have a picture of my number one, because for me, it's really the first time we've ever shown nudity on this show. But for our chat room out there,
wait, is it full or is it just the top
one? My number one is Linnea Quigley.
We should have sourced
1985 pictures. Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, dude, no way. My God. Is that the one? No, that isn't the one where she only has one arm.
That's the zombie who gets up and does the striptease. Oh, sorry, the punk rocker who gets up and gets the striptease, who then gets turned into a zombie later on.
Okay, so why was she doing it here? I've totally forgotten.
She just
gets
up on a gravestone and starts doing a striptease. She's with a whole bunch of like punks and bikies and stuff like that.
And there's no particular reason for this.
No.
Who made that one?
You need a reason?
Dan O'Bannon directed it. He was the writer of Alien. And this was his directorial debut, was to direct the send-up of Night of the Living Dead, and which I love quite a lot. But Linnea Quigley, that scene, I remember sitting there in the cinema going, all right. I thought, yeah, damn straight. I was disappointed to find out later that she is actually wearing a crotch piece, because it looks like she's just fully naked.
I don't agree. I actually always thought, I was like, that's a little bit too...
She just looks like she was like very well groomed, but to say, you know, whatever. But no, she is actually wearing a crotch piece, but it's flesh-colored crotch piece. But yes, she was gorgeous. So she is my number one. I do have some honorary mentions.
I have an honorary
which I believe
mention
you do
and
too.
A dishonorary mention.
I'm going to throw in an honorary mention and say Jenny Augutter from 1981's American Werewolf in London, who I've always had a thing for Jenny Augutter. And not technically a horror film, but I had to throw this out there because I just thought it was unexpected, for one, and two, almost perfection, which was Katie Holmes in The Gift. Because that was just gorgeous, and it's a thriller more than a horror.
What I love about that film is it was so, like, that was such an impressive scene. They then stuck it in Harold and Kumar.
And in the film, not only is there the scene, but then there's a flashback to the scene later. It's like, we gotta milk this footage for everything it's worth. But, I thought it was completely unexpected. Nobody would have thought Katie Holmes was going to do that, because she was like, butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. Innocent, and then she suddenly does that scene, and everybody kind of went, "Whoa!"
And it also came out of nowhere, because you know how like it's usually very scandalous when people do that. It's like this is going to happen, and everybody kind of goes mental over it. And with that, it was just kind of like it happened. And everybody's like, "Oh wait, Katie Holmes did what?"
That's why they flashback.
Now, what was your honorary mention?
My honorary mention is a sci-fi movie, Lisa Naff. The three-boobed woman in Total Recall.
Damn straight. Prosthetic they may be, but gorgeous they were.
I can dream. And dishonorary mention, Masters of Horror, Heckle's Tale. The whole fucking thing. The whole thing. It's just
nasty.
It's like a little bit of setup, maybe 10 minutes of setup, and then a zombie orgy for the rest of the film.
I've got to see this one.
Seriously, horrible
you
zombies.
Don't. Decomposing
the dishonorable mention also has to go to the old woman's second half of the scene from The Shining, because really not something you want to see. Alright, we've got to get ourselves out of here. We are way over time, so we're going to say, if you agree or disagree with anything that we have to say on this show, please
don't try and burn our houses down.
Instead, send us a feedback at geekactually.com and tell us what your feelings are. You know, and if we
and how much you like boobies.
And how much you like boobies, absolutely. Or maybe there's nothing, not. You know what? There's nothing wrong with boobies. All right. Boobies are perfectly
You'll
nice.
Notice my entire list was built up on the fact that we were just talking about that part. So I actually don't have any full nude in mind.
Well, see, I wasn't even focusing on the full nude part. It's just Linnea Quigley was fully nude.
No. There were boobies.
You know, it was the fact that she had nice boobies.
It was an attraction thing for me. This is why, like, when we actually started talking about it, wow, this could be taken the wrong way if people don't listen. We should have started that with a disclaimer.
No, look, it is about those scenes where you sit there and go, whoa, didn't expect that coming.
Yeah. It's
like, but, and when you see a film like Piranha, you can't help but think about boobies. It's unfortunately because there are.
I think it's
they're just everywhere.
A lot of boobies in that film.
Yeah, I think what was my level of not disassociation, but what I'm thinking of when you no longer see something and feel that it's a problem.
Boobies?
Help me out here, Dave.
Desensitization.
Yeah, my line of desensitization has now slightly gone down.
Delta Knight said, oh, guys, everyone forgot zombie strippers and lesbian vampire kills.
No, I've already counted that. It said, nah, sit-ups don't count.
Yeah, I didn't count them because of exactly that. We knew exactly what we were. I mean, your film stars Jenna Jameson, you know what's coming, you know? Yeah. All right, so if you agree or disagree with us, send us a feedback at feedback@geekactually.com or you can send us a voicemail at 02-801-1-3-1-6-7. Let your voice be heard. If it is short, to the point, and on topic, we will play it on the show. Okay. Now you can also help support the show. We have Geek Actually stuff, cups and merchandise and swag. Cafe. Hello, there's a studio phone going off. We'll just ignore that. cafepress.com.au/geekactually is where you get that, and you can also follow us on Facebook. We have a fan page there, which is facebook.com/geekactually. Now, Josh, how can people find out more about you?
That was a very...
And I happen to know so well that I already have a lower third for
you. yes, well, as is directly below me on the thing, I also have my own website, which is DLC Live.
And Callum, how can we find out more? No, go right. Sorry.
No, you finish.
I'm going to let you finish.
Beyonce had the best video there, right? that one will never get old. Yeah, so rawdlc.com if you want to see anything games related. Me personally, you can find me at Josh Philpott or Geek Josh, facebook.com/Geek Josh. If you want me on Facebook, please add who you are, otherwise I will ignore you, because there are lots of
You must say, anytime
there.
You follow us personally on any social networks, make sure you do put a sub-note in there saying where you heard about us, because otherwise you could just be anybody, and we have no idea who you are. We can't just accept everybody, because you could be a lunatic.
Yep. I want.
But it's okay if you're a lunatic, we know.
That's right, damn straight.
If anyone here has iTunes, remember, Geek Actually, Film Actually, and Tech Actually, and of course DLC Live. If you go onto iTunes, it would take you 5 minutes to do all four. Jump on, type each one of those into the search bar, and just click the star rating. You just literally have to click on it, and it will give us star ratings. That pushes us up onto the new and noteworthy, which
means
more people
find us. And if you have a little bit of extra
us.
Time, you can always write us a one-line review.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw this out, even though it's nothing related to Dave's show, a huge shout-out to Delta Knight, who has given me a massive donation for our drive to getting a new computer for DLC Live. It has been a real kind of push to get money and get money together from my side as well, and that money will so help towards getting me a better computer and keeping me out of the gutter and in a house. So thank you so much.
Not that you're plugging
and
it anymore.
I want to thank you so much too, because it means that Josh might stop panhandling on my show.
I said this was the last one last time. You brought up the fact that I shouldn't.
Oh, dearie me.
You just love... Just,
I like hassling you.
You really do.
Callum, how can people find out more about you on the internet?
People can find me on the Facebook. The Facebook. And you can find things I've written on Geek Actually and on my blog, www.bloodyjaw.com.
Callum.
That,
yeah. Callum is going to see Joss Whedon tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
Now, Callum just put a lovely article up on Geek Actually all about Joss Whedon, and it's been published, and it was a good article, although I did have to correct you on one little piece of information you put on there. I put it in the comments section. He didn't handpick the cast out of Buffy for Firefly. It was actually the other way around. So he gave them all bits in Buffy and Angel's final seasons because he felt guilty that Firefly had been cancelled. Anyway, but that's my note here, right there. but the point
Guys,
is...
no nerd fights on
But
the
point is that because you are going to see it, I expect a nice full report from you on the Joss Whedon event, because I can't go, unfortunately. All right, so yes, we will be expecting an article from Callum on Geek, actually, about this wonderful Joss Whedon.
Well, I'm going on media tickets. So if there's any chance of meeting him afterwards, I'll see if I can get a Joss Whedon endorses geek, actually.
That'd be fantastic. Get a picture if you can. That would be fantastic. Send us a picture. All right. And so, yes, you can find out more about Callum by going to his Facebook, or, as we say, he also does contribute articles to Geek Actually, which is great. He's a very good writer.
Thank you. And if anybody would like to pay me to write for them.
Well, we're not going to. Shane, how can people find out more about you on the internet?
All right, you can find me on FriendFace. FriendFace. Sorry.
FriendBook.
Just type in Shane Robert Gregory or Nexus81. And you can also find me on rawdlc.com, the tech guy.
Fantastic.
And Xbox Live. I forgot. I am on Xbox Live.
What is your name? What's your game tag?
Anything else you want to do to expand this a little bit further out?
Also, sometimes I'm at his house.
All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you guys for joining us. We have a couple of things we just got to plug really quickly. First of all, we do go out live. The film show is the second show up, so it's about an hour in, but we do start broadcasting at 12 p.m. every Saturday at geekactually.com/live. So do check us out there. And we also have a couple of friends that we have to pimp really quickly. First of all, I just want to put a quick shout out to the Real Junkies podcast, which you can find over at weekendronin.com or search for them on iTunes. That's R-E-E-L. They're another movie podcast where the guys get sauced up on tequila and then talk about movies, and they're a lot of fun. And we also want to put out a shout, of course, we mentioned it at the head of the show already, but we will do the official shout out to the Movie Fan Cast, which you can find at moviefanhouse.com, which they have the Movie Fan Cast. They also have Right This Instant, Brad's new show, and they're going to have that Walking Dead special series soon. They are a great bunch of guys. Brad, Charlie, Jesse, keep up the good work. And, of course, one last one that we just have to mention. We cannot go past without mentioning it because the artwork is almost here. And that, of course, is Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He is supplying us with new cartoon artwork for our cover arts and other things that we are going to do. And we're hopefully we'll get some new merchandise up with this cover art. And it's very funny stuff. I like it a lot. We will have him on the show, on the after show, in the next week or so when we debut the artwork. So it'll be a lot of fun. So yes, do go over to his site and check out his artwork. He is very, very talented. But if nobody else has anything else to add, we are way late.
I got one more.
No. Oh yeah, go for no, it.
I'm
go
just,
for it. Nothing
I'm
else.
Just kidding. I'm just messing with you.
Okay, and as we has become the
how does it feel, Dave?
I'm turning Josh's microphone off at this point. All right. If we have nothing else to add to this whole show, we are going out as we have been with all Film Actually shows since the breakup, which is we are going to use a piece of the score from the film that we just saw. So we actually have some of the music from Piranha 3D that we will play us out with. But in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. Believe it or not, even in Piranha 3D, and the meaning of life would be boobies.
Boobies.
And thank you to our chat room, who we couldn't do the show without. Thank you, guys. We'll see you all next week.